This show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And on Thursday, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Illinois Wesleyan University, you can hear quite a number of performances by students, faculty, and community members in Bloomington in the 13th annual Festival of Spirituals and Songs in honor of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The organizer of the event, and the founder, for that matter, is Dr. Karen Moham. She is Associate Professor of Voice at Illinois Wesleyan, and it'll be my pleasure to talk with her on the program today, and we'll hear some samples of some of the spirituals and songs that are on that program. And then for the later half of the show, we'll hear some extra spirituals in honor of Dr. King a few days after the official holiday. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come a-tumbling down.
We heard the spiritual Joshua at the Battle of Jericho in an arrangement by Harry T. Burley and sung by the iconic William Warfield, who used to be on faculty at the University of Illinois here, where WYLL is. And there are actually going to be two different arrangements of that spiritual sung in the MLK Festival of Spirituals and Songs, the 13th Annual Festival at Illinois Wesleyan University's Evelyn Chapel, Thursday at 4 p.m. And with me on the phone from Illinois Wesleyan is the coordinator and founder of this festival, Associate Professor there of Music, Karen Moham, who's a voice professor. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So first, how does this differ from, because I noticed there's another festival that happens there, from the Holiday Gospel Festival that happened on Monday?
Yes. Well, this one, the Gospel Festival that happened on Monday on the King holiday is actually not a university event, even though it's held at the university and we do advertising for it, and it is a wonderful event that happens on our campus. Our actual students, faculty, staff are not actually involved in performing on the program itself. And so when I came to Illinois Wesleyan, I thought it'd be wonderful if we had an event, a musical event, that featured our faculty and staff and students. And anyone on campus is welcome to join. We even also have people from the community very often who will be on the program. So it's just our tribute to Dr. King and his legacy.
And you do have it billed as spirituals and songs.
Yes.
What's the difference?
Well, a spiritual is usually a piece that is based on usually the Old Testament of the Bible. And for many of these songs, for instance, you just mentioned Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho is actually taken from the book of Joshua in the Bible. And so these Bible verses were taken and set to music, and of course slaves sang them, and they were taken and set to music. And then later on, you had people like Harry Burley, who you mentioned, who took the spirituals and put them in a form that were not oral. He took them and he set them to music so that they could be performed in concert. An art song, on the other hand, is usually poetry that is set to music. Now, some do say, and of course I say myself, that spirituals are actually a form of art song, because you really can't get any better poetry than some of the words that are found in the Bible. You know, the Song of Solomon and Proverbs and Psalms are actual beautiful poetry. So that is the actual difference, is that while an art song may or may not be something that is taken from the Bible, a spiritual usually is. It is something that is taken from the Bible.
And of course, when these folks like Harry Burley and a lot of the other arrangers who were involved in this particular concert take a spiritual, in a way, they're often turning it into an art song.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what they did. And many of the composers in the past actually called the spirituals America's first art songs. They were not transplanted from Europe. And so you'll have Antonin Dvorak, for instance, who was friends with Harry Burley and was one of his teachers, actually called the spiritual America's first art song.
There, this is probably a really much longer discussion, but I have heard that there are such things as white spirituals and black spirituals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's
yeah,
the difference there?
Discussion.
We could probably spend a whole hour on this one.
We actually could.
What do you have both on this concert, or are these all black spirituals?
No, this concert, because we really truly wanted to just kind of stick with honoring the legacy of Dr. King. And on this concert, yes, there are spirituals that are mostly spirituals that are either by a black composer, or there's something that is traditionally sung, and that wanted to use something that was used in the civil rights movement, or was by a black composer, you know, something like that. So we kind of wanted to stick to that. So most of these, in fact, all of these on here are by black composers or were significant in the civil rights movement, or both.
You have most of these, I'm just looking through here. Yeah, most of these on the program are sung by soloists. You have a few that are...
A few duets and one group. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the First Christian Church Drexler Singers,
mm-hmm.
That's obviously a community ensemble, as you
yes.
mentioned.
Uh-huh.
What's the mix of soloists? Do you have both students, faculty, and community soloists
yes,
on this
there
concert?
Are. On the program, there you can see there are several student soloists. We have on the program Dr. Justin Vickers, who is a faculty soloist, Professor Robert Mangialardi, who is also a faculty soloist. I'm singing, so obviously a faculty soloist. So Vadim Mazo, who is playing violin, he is a faculty member. He is one of our teachers here. And Dr. Todd Tucker, who is professor emeritus, he was one of our theory teachers here and also a wonderful pianist, so he is playing on the program as well. We also have Dr. Susan Klotzbach, who is actually premiering a piece in this area that was just recently written and published. So she's an organist, and so she will be playing that piece as our postlude, which is a wonderful piece called Ascend the Mountain, A Walk with Dr. King. So we have several faculty performers on the program.
And so the rest are students in your program?
The rest
there.
Are students, yes.
Yeah.
And they every year... you know, I have so many of them, I have to have a cutoff so I can say, okay, if you don't have your stuff in by this date, that's it.
That's how it works in academia.
Yes,
do your job
yes,
and then do your work and
uh-huh.
you get credit for it.
Exactly.
Well, let's hear, this is an arrangement, well, again, this is a different arrangement from the one that you're going to be doing of the spiritual He's Gone Away. You're doing one by Catherine K. Davis, going to be sung by soprano Lauren Schaefer. And here's one arranged by composer Gail Kubik. And it's sung here by the Dale Warland Singers, just to give you a flavor of this tune if you don't happen to know it. We're talking with Karen Malm, who is coordinator of the MLK Festival of Spirituals and Songs, 13th Annual Festival. It's going to be at Illinois Wesleyan University's Evelyn Chapel Thursday at 4 o'clock. And you're listening to Live and Local. We heard the Dale Warland Singers in Gail Kubik's arrangement of the spiritual He's Gone Away. That's one of the many spirituals and songs that will be on the concert for Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Festival of Spirituals and Songs, Thursday at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. My guest is Karen Malm, who is a professor of voice at Illinois Wesleyan. I noticed from your own bio that you've done some research into some of the unknown and unpublished art songs of African American composers.
Yes, I have.
What was the process of digging some of that up, and did you ever literally have to dig?
Yes, I literally had to dig. It actually started off when I was a master's student at the University of Oklahoma, and my teacher Carol Bryce gave me an art song by a black woman, Margaret Bonds. And I just loved the song. She actually had known Margaret Bonds, and Margaret Bonds had given her an original of the song. And so she passed it on to me. And I went to her, and I said, oh, my gosh, I'd love to have some more of these songs. And she said, well, good luck trying to find them. And really, basically, all we had was the actual songs that Margaret Bonds had actually given to her. And so I took those, and in later years, you know, I would decide, well, you know, I'd really like to have the time to go back and try to find some of these songs. We knew there were more out there because, as I said, she knew some of these people, but where were they? And so when I went back to the Ohio State University to work on my doctorate, this became my project, to find these songs, to perform them, to get them out there, to kind of get together with some of my friends, to maybe have them edited and published and things like that. And so I did actually have to dig. I went to the Library of Congress, and of course then, this was in the 90s before 9/11, and I was able to go, and they let me go into the vaults and just, you know, look around at some of these old things, and I found a book of art songs that was by Negro composers. That's what it was called. And it had been out of print for years, and of course I've come to find out later that it was because all of the songs were written by black people, and because of that, if any of the music stores carried the book, then those music stores were boycotted. And so because of that, the book went out of print, nobody performed the songs, and I actually premiered several of the songs last year in a concert that I did to just once again get them sung and get them out there. Also, there's a composer from Chicago. Margaret Bonds is also from Chicago, but there's another one, Florence Price. I found a lot of her things in the University of Pennsylvania Library when she passed away. She left her catalog to the University of Pennsylvania Library, and it was just sort of in a vault, just sort of in boxes in a vault. And I dug and dug at the Library of Congress and found that, and went to Pennsylvania, went to Philadelphia, and spent days, weeks, going through all of that music so that I could use that as part of my dissertation, and actually rewrote my dissertation to include those things because I found them after I'd already started the dissertation. So I went ahead and rewrote it so that I could include them because I just could not, in good conscience, leave them out. So yes, a lot of digging. I'm still digging. When I take any kind of leave from here at Illinois Wesleyan, that's what I do. I go and try to see if I can find some more of these songs and put them on my concerts.
There must be other folks who are digging as well. Is there growing to be some sort of body of this work that is much less unknown now?
Yes, and that's one of the wonderful things, is that if one person starts digging, then a lot of other people start digging. And I do have people that will contact me now, people that are going and working on their doctorates, and they'll call and ask me, and you know, why reinvent the wheel? And so I'll share my information with them, because after all, I already have my doctorate, so I'm happy to share the information with them so that they can get out and keep it going. And through that, you know, people have really gotten out there and started digging and sharing. And of course, the internet is wonderful because you can really share things through that and put things on the internet, and other people can pick it up and keep going with it. So yes, and of course, the wonderful thing, being a voice teacher, I can assign these songs to my students, and they carry on with it. I was talking to one of my students last night, and she said, oh, Dr. Moham, I've been assigning these songs to my students. And that makes me very excited that my students are carrying it on and passing it on. So, and then hopefully we can get more things published.
Here's another song that's on the program, and in fact, this is the arrangement that's on the program of The Spiritual Weepin' Mary. It's another of Harry T. Burley's arrangements. It's going to be sung on your program by soprano Mary Nicholas, And we're going to hear it sung by the baritone Jubilant Sykes, who has a wonderful first name.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, with an orchestral accompaniment, the London Symphony Orchestra, led by Andrew Litton. You don't have a full symphony orchestra there, but you have many different pianists involved.
Yes.
On that program. And we're talking about the Festival of Spirituals and Songs in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. It's going to be Thursday at 4 o'clock at Evelyn Chapel on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. And you're listening to Live and Local. Jubilant Sykes sang Weepin' Mary, as arranged by Harry T. Burley, performed here also with the London Symphony Orchestra, led by Andrew Litton. Soprano Mary Nicholas will be joined by pianist Marcia Hishman on the concert of Spirituals and Songs to honor Martin Luther King on Thursday afternoon in Bloomington on Illinois Wesleyan University campus. And those two performers, just two of many who are on the program. As I said, there's a number of different pianists.
Mm-hmm.
Are they also students, or some of those faculty members?
No, most of the pianists on the program, in fact, I think all of them are members of our accompanying staff, and they very graciously give of their time.
Well, and that explains probably also how they're able to prepare a number of them.
Yes, exactly. We do have one person you might have noticed at the beginning of the program, Stefan Riley, who is doesn't have an accompanist, and that's because he is singing his piece unaccompanied, which is the way they would have been back in the days of slavery and back in the days when churches didn't necessarily have a piano. Everything would have been sung a cappella. And so Stefan is going to start our program off by singing an a cappella spiritual, His Name's So Sweet.
Yeah, that should be wonderful. And that's in Hall Johnson's arrangement.
Yes, Hall Johnson arrangement. Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys who arranged and girls, although mostly guys at the time who had the choirs, they would do arrangements sometimes for their own choirs,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. That was very common to do arrangements for the choirs, and then at a later time you would have a solo arrangement. It could also be the other way around, where there would be a solo arrangement, and then again, just like, as you and I were talking before the show here, then you sort of get a call and response thing going, and then the next thing you know, it turns into a choir piece, so...
I direct a church choir here in Champaign, and we occasionally will do a spiritual of some kind or another, and I've been asked a few times, well, how do you deal with the black dialect?
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a workshop one time which was led by Roland Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a composer and arranger,
yes,
and director,
mm-hmm,
of course. And he addressed that in an interesting way. And I'm curious to know how you address that when coaching your students in these songs.
Well, I usually tell them not to try to imitate that dialect, the slave dialect. I can't even do it. But I do tell them to relax the diction. Don't feel like it has to be really proper like you would have an English art song. In other words, you don't have to say these, days, those kinds of things, but relax your diction, make it comfortable with your spirit, but you don't have to sing it as though it is a European art song. If you try to imitate the slave dialect, it really comes off as sounding pretentious. It comes off as sounding like you're making fun sometimes, and we don't want to do that. You know, we want to be respectful and be honorable, and just like I said, I can't do it. I don't know how that would have been. I wasn't there, but I do know that I can sing things in a manner that is comfortable and that fits with the music, and that's what we want to do more than anything else. We want to sing it in such a way that is comfortable and that it fits with the music and fits with what we're trying to say.
That's pretty much what Roland Carter said,
which
I always found very useful in coaching, because you can make the D's and Do's and so on, they would sound so correct that it sounds like you're turning it into a European art song,
exactly,
just with different language.
Exactly, yes, yes.
Well, since you mentioned call and response, and you also mentioned earlier that you are yourself singing but one song on this program, the very last song, and you're going to do a bit of a call and response with it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wade in the Water.
Yes.
Your arrangement.
Yes.
How did you, what was your process in arranging this spiritual?
Well, it was one of my grandmother's favorites, and it was also one of the ones that was sung very often in the civil rights movement. And I just got to thinking about it one day, and I thought, well, you know, I would love to have something. I was doing a concert, and I thought I would love to have something on the end of the concert that the audience could join in with me. And I just thought about several things, but because this was my grandmother's, one of her favorites, I settled on Wade in the Water. And the versions that you normally see are either done in a solo version or they're done in a choir arrangement. But I wanted to do it so I could have the audience join me. And so I would sing the verses, you know, "See that man all dressed in white," and then my audience would go, "God's a-gonna trouble the water," and "the leader looks like the Israelite, God's a-gonna trouble the water." So I call, they respond. So, and then they sing the verse with me, "Wade in the water," and they sing that part with me, and then the chorus with me, and then I sing the verse, and they respond with, "God's gonna trouble the water." So I sang it at the first Martin Luther King Festival of Spirituals and Songs, and I really was not going to do it after that. And then some people in the community said, "Oh, you have to do it." And so now it's just sort of become a tradition. Every year, we do that. I was on sabbatical one year, and I had someone else to take over the program, and no one was going to do Wade in the Water. And they said, "Well, it won't be the same." So I actually came to town off my sabbatical so that I could do it on the program. So.
Well, you'll have to arrange another couple of call and responses now.
Yes, yes. So I think it's expected at this point. So.
Yes, that's how those things work, doesn't it? See, you do a good job once, and they just want you to do it over and over again.
Yes, and I guess that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, even over the phone, it sounds like you have a wonderful, rich voice. I'd love to hear you do it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Karen Malm is a professor of voice at Illinois Wesleyan University. She's coordinator of the 13th Annual Festival of Spiritual Songs in honor of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. It's going to happen this year on Thursday at 4 o'clock at Evelyn Chapel on the Wesleyan campus in Bloomington. And it has been a pleasure to meet you and talk with you here on Live and Local.
It is my pleasure as well. Thank you so much for having me.
And since you mentioned that usually it's either a solo or a choral version of Wade in the Water, here is a choral version. It's sung by the Howard University Chamber Choir here on FM 90.9.